development model is also the essence of what the Piquero plan speaks to, and you know, perhaps also how budget coordination can then really assist in how we integrate science and innovation into the work that the district development model seeks to do. I think those two particular elements of, well, this particular element of the decadal plan of saying we want to integrate science and innovation into various spheres of government, not into various departments, but into the to the three spheres of governance, into our municipalities, strengthening our municipalities to use innovation in order to address service delivery challenges, is also at the essence of the Piquero plan, which for me ties in strongly with what the district development model seeks to do. And so I often find great synergies between the two, and we really look forward to hearing. I think the last time we met with the department, Shanaz, if I'm not mistaken, to get a briefing, particularly on this, was in on the 7th of September 2021, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, we've had, you know, multiple conversations as we've received the performance plans of the department. Today we wanted to zoom in a bit more into it. And I don't know, Mr. Mwotha, I might be really jumping the gun here, but even in relation to planning that may take place in the recovery plans coming out of the floods in KZN, Northwestern, Eastern Cape. And, you know, whether or not, I think my question rather is whether or not the role of, because I think as we recover, we really ought to use the district development model to assist us, right, in doing things better. And how we recover in those particular municipalities that have been affected. And I think the role of the DSI then becomes really important also, I think, in sustainable planning, using innovation to address various infrastructural challenges and service delivery challenges that we need to address around infrastructure, around sustainable planning, I mean, of our communities, of our settlements, right? To make sure that they are durable to all sorts of disasters that may reoccur. So I don't know if my thinking is, you know, in line or I'm trying to merge these elements a bit too much, but I think they do come together, and it would be really interesting to also hear ideas and plans that the department has in relation to some of these matters. So I'd like to then hand over to yourselves, colleagues. It's six minutes past nine, and I know I hope well, I know some of us had fun, Honorable Itiye, last night as we were hosted by the NRF as they celebrated their A and P rated scientists, and they had another a number of acknowledgements that they made. But the truth is, Dr. Mwotha, we still have a lot of work to do in terms of transforming science and innovation in South Africa. The awardees still did not reflect the demographics of South Africa. And I think colleagues, those of us who went to the midterm review, those colleagues who read through the reports that were sent from content team. Renee, our location as a committee right now in 2022 in terms of our focus on transformation in the sector is not misplaced. We're well within our, I don't know, rights and thinking to stress the importance of transformation in science and innovation. And yesterday, and seeing the awardees of your A&P rated scientists, was testament to the fact that the work that the portfolio committee is driving right now, Honorable Borshoff, whether it's innovation for transformation or transformation for relevant or impactful innovation, I don't know, we'll continue to have those discussions. But ultimately, the need for transformation in our sector is absolutely important. Really yesterday, those awards were a reminder of the importance of the key areas of interest that this portfolio committee is driving right now. Over to you, Mr. Moses.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson, and a very good morning to all honorable members and to my colleagues from the department who have joined me. Maybe two issues that you have raised, Chairperson, which I think is very important. The one relates to the role of this work on the DDM in, for example, dealing with the responses to various challenges. And in this instance, you make reference to the issue of flooding in both KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. I need to indicate here that we have provided some, and we have offered a number of possible solutions to the challenges that were being faced. And in some instances, we were actually approached by the province or the municipalities themselves. And indeed, we were able to really use various forms of innovation and technologies to assist in the flooding, ranging from the use of satellite imagery to try and map the extent of damage and where the damage was, and perhaps through the CSIR also looking at how some of the infrastructure can actually be repaired over time. But I think the challenge continues to be much greater. And one of the things that we're going to reflect to here on do the presentation on the digital development model is what we actually do per district in order to have a sense of the capacity that exists in that municipality. And then I think it will actually highlight how on the basis of that information and knowledge, we can actually now look at establishing or implementing initiatives under the DDM that deals with localized challenges. So that's really just the response very briefly to the issue that you have raised. Yes, we have been available and providing various assistance and also offering some, but for some reason, some of them couldn't be taken also because of capacity issues at municipal level. Now, on the question of transformation, I can agree more, Chair, we need to do that. And I think the challenge is much broader than just what the department can do, but looking at how do we actually make careers in academia exciting as opposed to other opportunities out there. And I think the initiatives through our sister department, such as the NGAP, which is looking at focusing on developing the new generation of academics, is going to come in handy. We need to make sure that on the basis, for example, of some of the black texts that the bulk of the young black professionals need to pay, they need to find it not as a burden to be in academia because they need to rush to make a difference in their families. Whereas when you look at the career in academia, it's quite involving from having to move into being a lecturer and growing and so on and so forth. So we're hoping that these initiatives such as NGAPS and others, the NRF itself has got a number of initiatives that are mainly focused on supporting young and emerging scientists. This we hope that they also are going to add to that. But yes, I agree with you, Chairperson. We have a long way to go, and we will definitely go there. And hopefully, as the CEO of the NRF said, that we'll do so sooner. Now, starting at the presentation, Chairperson, I hope that is it going to be projected from that side or? Am I supposed to do the projection?
Shanaz, will we be able to help colleagues or?
No, my screen is recording, so if you can do it from that side, because I can't minimize.
Okay.
Okay, let me try and do that. Apologies, I'm just trying to, can you see the presentation, Chairperson?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thanks very much. So I'm going to start, and as you have correctly said, Chairperson, we did present the initial phases of this sometimes, I think it was last year, and what we're trying to do today is mainly just to update you on the progress. But I just thought it would be prudent for me to just take you through a little bit of background just to try and reflect on where we're coming from. So this presentation will basically be, it will basically be providing an update. What we have started to move into is what we call the viability and validation of innovation for service delivery program. And this is where we're working with municipalities using the bottom-up approach, where municipalities that are engaged or districts that are engaged will then say to us, we've got a particular challenge around service delivery, and then we work together to develop innovative solution in dealing with that. So I will then recap a little bit on our interpretation and approach to the DDM, and then also have a bit of reflection on the portfolio of selected projects that are being supported here. We had actually, this is going to be the outline, looking at the DDM process one, process two, and process three. And then also to just share with you some of the approach in terms of how we identify projects and then how we move after we've identified them, working together with various partners and our implementing agencies. So the issue around the DDM is that it's ensuring that the projects that we are implementing that we're working jointly, both national, provincial, and local government, so that all the initiatives can properly be accounted for, budgeted for, and also georeference. So the georeferencing is quite important because you also want to then be able to do an assessment to say of all those initiatives that are in a particular district, what kind of impact are they making, or what are the gaps, and if there are gaps, what are the newer initiatives that can be brought on board to try and plug those gaps? So we therefore do what we call the gap analysis to understand how various government programs can respond to developmental challenges in a particular locality. And the work really is about ensuring that we have the so-called one plan, where the whole government initiatives are actually being done in a coordinated fashion. This is a process or an approach that is going to minimize duplication and wastage of resources, but making sure that in certain instances where capacities exist in one and not the other, those can actually be shared properly. So the main aim obviously is to solve the silo mentalities, both horizontal and government and vertical at government level. And one of the big challenges that we deal with, for example, is when you have challenges between districts in terms of development. There is always that feeling that the distance between people and government is way too wide, or you know, we are not in touch with the real challenges on the ground. So by this approach, then working directly with the people, who get a sense of what they're doing. And in the process, one of the challenges when services aren't coming or when opportunities don't exist in one district, you always have we see all sorts of movement of people between districts and so on and so forth looking for opportunities. And one of the things that we're trying to do is to really have a handle at or manage where it is possible this movement so that they can be restricted, at least insofar as people rushing to other districts to look for opportunities. So we really want to try and make sure that this is probably dealt with. Ensuring the integration of services, but also, as I've indicated previously, really to maximize the impact by looking at initiatives not only as one department, but cross departments and cross various levels of government. And the issue really is to that ultimately we need to make sure that at local level there are economic opportunities. So you don't have to say, for me to get economic opportunities, we always have to flock to a particular province or maybe a particular district. Also to ensure sustainable development while accelerating initiative to promote the aspects of eradication of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. So we basically here just try to reflect the principles underpinning the district development model and also the objectives of the model. I think I've already highlighted the objectives, really managing the rural urban migration patterns to ensure that we create opportunities as well in especially those rural districts, making sure that we have a handle on various economic drivers in those particular areas so that we can actually know that when we touch on this particular lever, we are going to be able to create those opportunities. And then one of the issues really is to institutionalize long-term planning so that we can address the burning issues in a manner that doesn't just solve them temporarily, but look at providing solutions that will be long lasting. So I've mentioned the issue of one plan here, just making sure that as one government, we are actually providing services in a manner that is properly coordinated. Demonstrate how geographic space, you know, we can make an impact by making sure that, and as I've indicated, one of the key things is georeferencing. So you want to be able to, at a click of a button, have a sense of what are the government interventions that are happening at a particular district, and how many are they, and what kind of priorities are they addressing, and over time be able through monitoring and evaluation to have a sense of whether they are making the desired impact or not. And the issue is really to respond on the actual conditions of people on the ground. So these are just the pillars. We do the demographic and district profile. I'll talk to a little bit about that. Making sure that we work towards positioning this district economically in a manner that creates good interdependencies. Spatial restructuring, I think that's quite important. One of the things that we really are having as a priority in government department, especially in the Department of Science and Innovation, is to say, how do we make sure that we have what we call spatial transformation? How do we change various areas that were traditionally not considered to be economically viable to then use innovation to make them viable? Integrated service provisioning, and this is probably one of the areas that when we talk about the progress we have made to date, the focus is going to be on issues of service delivery, infrastructure engineering, and then governance and financial management. And here is really one of the issues that we do, looking at various readiness index of municipalities, which can help us in terms of how do we plan going forward. The issue of district profiling is quite important. And here I just give an example. For example, when you profile Ekurhuleni district, so you're able to then say, this is the total population that we have in this particular district, and this is how fast or how slow it has been growing compared to other surrounding districts. And then to look at the poverty levels in that particular district, having a sense of the education levels of the citizens in the particular district. And this then helps you to then say what kind of tailor-made solutions can you bring in that particular district. So when you know the level of education, when it comes to matters of skills development, what actually do you then take there? When it comes to, you know, just even understanding, you know, what are the drivers? When you say it is agriculture in a particular district, then what are aspects of agriculture innovation can you then take there? So this is really just one quick profile of how we look at a district before you actually can then decide what kind of interventions can be brought there, because you don't want to bring in interventions that may not be suitable for that particular district. And here just another example of the Ugu district municipality, the profile again, looking at the population, looking at the you know, demographics of the people there, young people, the employment levels and so on and so forth, the poverty rate, and then going deeper into the actual wards to be able to have a sense of, you know, how many graduates do we have there. And I think with time, as this evolves, to be able to then have a sense of opportunities that can be taken, especially in terms of making sure that the young people are empowered. So this is another, a similar one done for the Zululand district. But the approach and principle is that we don't want to look at the district development model as just a simple listing of projects. It really has to go beyond that, because now the issue is, are they making an impact? Some of the initiatives might be there and perhaps not being very impactful. So the listing of project is not just what we're trying to do here. We also work directly with engaging municipalities. So it's not just about bringing in solutions and catapulting them into a particular municipality, but it is really working closely with them and saying, what are your challenges? How can we help you? And in some instances, really doing what we call the co-creation of solutions with the municipalities, which we think always assists in making sure that the solutions that we provide are actually acceptable. The issue of data and information intelligence is quite crucial, and it really links to the previous slides I was highlighting on the profiling of the districts. So that gathering of that intelligence also makes sure that the initiatives that you bring into these localities are actually relevant, and actually they have got buy-in. And most crucially, and then we have seen this time and again, that there is enough capacity to be able to absorb some of the opportunities that are given there. So we do find that in some instances, if you don't do that, you try to bring in solutions that may be very useful, but you find that on the ground, there isn't capacity to take those up. And therefore, we need to really use this intelligence to say, how do we then develop those capacitors? And from the DSI side, of course, we know that our political principles are allocated districts where they are champions. But we want to emphasize that the DSI's approach in dealing with this is not only to focus on those municipalities, on those districts, but also to go beyond that. And in fact, as we present the slide, you will see that we have already gone much further than just those three districts where our political principles are champions. It's really about the demonstration through those innovation projects of the regional focus and interlinkages between rural and urban communities. of these projects. So ultimately what you want to do is to make
honorable
sure
people, we all survive.
So ultimately what we want to do is to ensure that these initiatives are institutionalized. So you don't want a situation where we start an initiative, and then when you somehow think it is time for the district to take over, then everything collapses. So that's why work is about how this gets institutionalized. So initiatives are therefore engaged in such a manner that even the local government has got buy-in and they can invest their own resources to continue with that. So that's really is quite critical. And where necessary, of course, as government at national level, we leverage various international resources to seed some of these initiatives, and so that when they are actually becoming sustainable, we wouldn't really have had challenges with the availing of resources, especially insofar as aspects of skills development and in some instances provision of requisite infrastructure. It's about systems thinking. So you don't want to then just do one thing and then realize that when you have done this one thing, there are gaps in other areas. So when you look at systems thinking, it's about how the intervention you're providing actually has an impact on other aspects of service delivery. And of course, making sure that the impact, the quantum is much higher when you do the impact assessment when these initiatives are properly coordinated. So just looking at how the projects are selected into being the DDM, it's really about the weighting that we give. For example, how the initiative contributes to the DSI outcomes, how they are aligned to the white paper, the social development goals and sustainable development goals, and also the issue of response to poverty, unemployment, and matters of exclusion. So we very much are trying to make sure that these initiatives make sure that they've got an empowerment element. For example, making sure that we don't leave women behind, we don't leave young people behind, and we also take care of those that have got disabilities as well. The projects have to be responsive when it comes to skills development, dealing with issues of unemployment, but most crucially also building entrepreneurship, which we have found that in most areas, the neglect of the role that entrepreneurship can play in employment creation has led to people sitting and saying, okay, we all are just waiting to look for jobs elsewhere. But with entrepreneurship, we're starting to see, especially focusing on young people, young people are standing up and creating opportunities for employment for others and for themselves. And so we therefore look at the weighting, and we're able to say, okay, if a project addresses all these areas, then we can say it has got a high impact. If it addresses some and not all of them, medium impact, and then moderate and low impact. And obviously the bias is more towards high impact projects. So I just really wanted to give a sense of what is it that we look at when we ultimately decide that this particular project really fits to be under the district development model. So this is just explaining the same thing. So you see, high impact will be addressing all of those, medium impact some, moderate it will be addressing one or more of those, and then low impact probably just one. So that's really just the metrics in terms of how we do that. As I've indicated, and I'm going to be handing over soon to Tepang to just take us through the progress we have made to date, it's really about making sure that there is inclusion of youth, that we deal with the challenges that many of our youth are facing and our communities, whether we're talking about crime, drugs, issues around health. We have last night when we were talking about the awards, one of the things that really came out is that on the health front, we still have a lot of challenges to deal with, especially with young people when talking about matters of HIV and AIDS infection. So we also take initiatives that are going to address that. Matters around the disasters, whether it is drought, whether it is flooding, and so on and so forth. service provision, looking at basic services, whether it is water, sanitation, energy, education, and connectivity. So these are the areas that our initiatives are focusing on. Matters of secularization of our economy, there are a lot of opportunities that we are now starting to see the department leading. For example, the creation of what we call enviropreneurs, which are young people who are establishing enterprises on the basis of the secular economy. Issues around infrastructure, I've mentioned the inclusion issues. Skills training, and here we're talking about skills that are not necessarily master's and PhD qualifications, so, but really just making sure that people in these districts have got the skills that can help them be able to make a living. So I'm going to skip this again because it's looking at these issues of impact. And so I've indicated that we also look at what we call the georeferencing. So making sure that you know which initiatives are in which particular province and in which particular district. And as you can see, the bulk of our initiatives are in KwaZulu-Natal, followed by the Eastern Cape, and then we've got Gauteng and Limpopo, and then some of them are at national level. We do have some that as they come in, we're still trying to georeference. So at this point in time, we haven't done or finished the georeferencing process. So those will probably be still under unknown or to be confirmed. But as you can see, some of the provinces or the districts that require our interventions, they are still lagging behind, not because of lack of opportunities from being provided from our side, but also because on their side, either because of capacity issues and the speed of response, some of these are still lagging behind, but we continue to work with these municipalities to improve that. And this is really just where we have grouped them in terms of high, low, and medium impact. And as you can see, I've indicated that our bias is making sure that we've got initiatives that are going to help us make a bigger impact. So that's why you see 84% of these are really sitting at high impact. And then we've got others that are classified differently. So these are the maps. This just shows how we have done the proper mapping of all the initiatives that the department has. So the green really indicates where we have mapped, and we're mapped, and we find that there are DSR initiatives, and then the other color, which is now the areas that haven't been mapped. And here you can see the red dots are actually the actual initiatives or the projects that are sitting there. So you see that the department is actually basically present in all provinces and in as many municipalities as possible, but we still are going to have to grow this. And this is really just a listing of various initiatives, where they sit and what they are about. And the point is really just to give a sense of what projects are in each area. Now, Tsepang is going to take us through just the progress report of some of the service delivery program activities. And here I need to indicate that we've been working very well with the Department of Corporate Governance. And when we had the briefing with them and the CSIR last week, the plan is that we are going to intensify this to make sure that both at provincial and local government level, they can be aware of these offerings that we have so that they can make use of them, because those municipalities that are using this are beginning to see a lot of value in that. Tsepang, can you just take through the next one? So I'm going to be moving the slides for you. Are you ready, Tsepang?
I'm ready, TDG. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. So the background that was given really strengthens the approach and the background, how we are approaching this, and also the selection criteria, like the DDG has explained, our three-pronged strategy. So if you will recall, he mentioned that we've got process one, process two, and process three. So today, deliberately, we are just giving you a sense of how we are implementing process two. So process two is a program on innovations for service delivery. We call it VVISDP. So I am not giving you a progress on process one. which is the 126 or so projects that are already existing in the DSI in different municipalities. And I'm also not giving you a presentation or a progress update on process three. And process three is about interventions coming out of the decadal plan that will be implemented in the municipalities. So Chair, we have taken an approach very deliberate to not parachute initiatives to the municipalities as a silver bullet. We have taken an approach for process two, the VVISDP, which I'm going to talk about briefly here, an approach where municipalities themselves are actively involved in the selection of those technologies that can improve service delivery, but they themselves become critical players of the national system of innovation. This will help us in the long term that whatever technologies they have selected to improve service delivery, they can institutionalize those technologies. They can also have sustainability plans for those technologies so that they do not become white elephants. So the VVISDP program, the objective, just to get started on that, is really what you see on the screen. We were to select a number of technologies that will pilot to improve the delivery of basic services. So the basic services, we're looking at water, sanitation, energy, ICT, and waste management. In doing that, Chair, we are doing this project with an objective of inclusion, socioeconomic rights, and the involvement of the unemployed. So in all these tech demonstrations that we are talking about just briefly here, we are trying to make sure that the programs or the projects or the interventions are designed in a manner that can at least create some inclusion opportunities of the cooperatives, especially the unemployed youth, so that we can also look at how these initiatives are helping with employment or income opportunities to an extent. The next one, TDG. Hello, TDG.
Trying to move it.
Okay. Can I perhaps roll from my side, DDG, if it's possible?
Can you see the next slide?
I can, yes.
Okay, sure.
All right. So, Chair, again, this program, the VVISDP program, is structured into six sub-projects. So last time we came to Portfolio Committee, we did mention this. So the first project is Project One, which is the biggest project. Like I said, it's on water, sanitation, energy, waste management, ICT. So we call it Project One. You will see on the green bubbles there. So that's the biggest project, and it's taking most of the budget. And then Project Two is Decision Support Tools, the next green bubble there. So Decision Support Tools, Chair, mainly systems. We have come to learn when we engage municipalities, they are asking for support in terms of digitization and also business process systems. It is still a big a challenge. You may just often assume all these systems are in place. So they have approached us and said they want us to help them with business support tools. Project three, we are measuring innovation in municipalities, Chair. And we are also building the capacity of municipal officials. So that's Project Three under UKZN. I will explain later, maybe in detail, what we're doing there. And then Project Four is really about making sure we integrate innovation in the municipal policy environment. There are a number of hurdles. Technology and innovation sometimes cannot be procured through the PFMA process because of specifications. So we are looking at what are these hurdles and how can we influence municipal policies to be more enabling across municipal value chain, the policies themselves to be the enablers. And then Project Five is on e-participation, where we are testing how to use ICT tools to help municipalities who want to create mechanisms through technology for citizens to engage in policy processes in municipalities. So we are very excited about this project five. Hopefully it will have lessons also just generally about how we engage around policies. We're learning a lot from other countries in this. So project six is administrative. In total for project one and project two, we've got 42 projects. Thank you, DDG. The next one. Okay, I think you skipped the slide there. Thank you. So again here, Chair, this is a demonstration of how many municipalities we've enrolled, how many municipalities are benefiting on this process too, we call the VVISTP. So when we released an expression of interest, we received 108 written expressions of interest from different municipalities. But some of the expressions of interest could not really pass our requirements. About 64 of those, we put them on what we call a parking bay because we asked to revisit that. So they were not correctly motivated, and some documentation we needed was not there, and there were some other issues around those expressions of interest. But we took on board, we took on board about 64. We reserved about 44. Then on project one and two, like I said, it's 42 projects. So we've got 24, and then we also have 18 on decision support tools. And the rest, project three, eight, four, seven. But the, what you call, the graphic on the bottom right-hand corner, the table there that shows yellow, it just gives you a sense, Chair, of the list of technologies in terms of decision support tools they had requested. So the yellow part you'll see is GIS, utility systems, management systems, and dashboards, field staff monitoring systems. So they came to us and said, this is what we need help about. And then we are co-creating now with them and selecting technologies that we can support them with. The next one. Right. So at a very high level, Chair, before I go into each project now, this summarizes what I really want to say. 24 texts on water sanitation, waste management, 18 decision support tools, if you look at the yellow block, 35 municipalities are on board. We've secured the funding. We've got the funding of about 100 million rands or so for this particular program. We have appointed implementing entities. So these are our knowledge research institutions who have got technologies, but who will also go out and call for these technologies in the private sector and get the most suitable technologies to improve these services, because we will not assume that technologies will only be at the CSIR. The other technologies that are out there in the private sector that can help with wastewater management as an example. So we've brought all the DSI research entities. SANEDI is doing energy with municipalities, WRC is doing water and sanitation, CSIR is involved on decision support tools, TI is doing fund management, UKZN is doing capacity building, HSRC, they are looking at a policy environment. They have also engaged with municipalities, Chair, one-on-one to understand exactly what the requirements. If it's a decision support tool that a municipality in Drakenstein, they have said they need around field monitoring, what exactly that, and how can we then help through this program? And then we have also finished those requirements analysis workshops. The implementing entities I've mentioned there on the slide have released the calls for these technologies. So the municipalities are now in the current of selecting the most suitable technologies they need for their challenges. The business plans have been developed by the implementing entities, and the budget has been transferred by the DSI for this particular program. Next slide. Just to zoom into project one, Chair, like I said, on project one, it's water and sanitation, energy, waste, and the others, you know, your typical basic services. So just on this one, on project one by Water Research Commission, the Water Research Commission is an implementing entity. So they have established a Water Sanitation Innovation Technology Unit. So there is a structure. Again, Chair, to mention, we will not be able to successfully deliver without some governance arrangements and some institutional arrangements. So some PMUs have been formulated, the one for water and sanitation, the WSITU PMU at WRC Water Research Commission is in place just to engage municipalities and to help them. What they have done is the detailed feasibility processes. We've got experience where we had in the past recommended the water and sanitation technology, but you'll find that it's not feasible in that particular municipality. So this time around, they are doing feasibility assessments, and also they are identifying and technologies and asking the municipalities to select those technologies. They've released the calls for those technologies, and they are selecting technologies from a database. We've got a database of the next generation sanitation technologies. So these are technologies for sanitation that do not rely on water. So we want to see from an infrastructure point of view, the non-sewage technologies in municipalities or in communities, how could that work out? So we call an activity the SASTEP. And they are also selecting from a way that this is a database of big water technologies. They have also set up governance structures, like I've mentioned, and undertaken requirements analysis workshops and engaged municipalities one-on-one. So this is what WRC has been doing so far. The next slide, DDG. Now here you see a list of municipalities. We've got City of Tshwane. We've got Eguruleni on this project. We've got Mbombela. We also have Drakenstein, but you may see there's Eguruleni times three. So you will find that underwater and sanitation, Eguruleni as one municipality is looking at three different technologies. And then we've got City of Cape Town, we've got Mbashe, and then the last one is Solentem. The next slide, TDG. Right, now the next activities for water and sanitation really is to complete the feasibilities and also to make sure there is matchmaking. The municipalities will sign MOUs with them for selecting those technologies and then contracting. Now there is going to be contracting between the technology developers and the municipalities to implement now the technologies. But I think the first phase, which I've just reported on, was more to initiate, but now we are going into a matchmaking where municipalities will be matched to the technologies they need, and then they then conclude an implementation agreement with the tech developer, and then WRC oversees the entire technology implementation under water and sanitation. Thank you, DDG. Then on energy, it's more about energy management in municipalities, and the implementer here is SANEDI. Now we are also looking at piloting and demonstrating renewable energy solutions. We've been emphasizing, Chair, to them that because we don't have much of a big budget, we may not be doing big energy infrastructure, but a smart grid where possible, where communities could also participate, like I said, the socioeconomic involvement and the socioeconomic benefits and the socioeconomic rights of people. So we are very much alert to bringing in communities in this technology demonstration. So this one is on energy. Next slide. The approach by SANEDI is divided into those work packages, initiation, which is work package one, and those milestones have been achieved. They've collected data on technologies that could be demonstrated. We've gone through inception meetings with them. They've consulted with the municipalities as well to understand the requirements. The next slide. City of Cape Town again comes back under energy with the Giza Tech technology and the Copon system they want to implement. And then Drakenstein, about electronic meter reading. And then Mbombela, we are engaging with them again on energy. Their proposal was not so very clear. Giza control, public lights control in Rustenburg. The last one, Mhlatshuze, I think we will be referring this project back to Project 2 because it is actually a decision support tool, the last one there, Chair. But this just gives you a sense of who is involved. We have established contact for individual project managers in each municipality. The next slide, DDG. And then on highlights around energy, although some of the municipalities have defined what they require very well, Chair, we still experience the challenges where some of the municipalities were very unclear. And the contracting and budgeting, like I said, this slide is outdated. We have gone past that. Sanity has got a contract, it's been approved, they've got a budget. SALGA is working with us. We have COGTA also coming on board. We just had a presentation of this program to COGTA with the DDG here about 2 weeks ago. We still have a problem though, Chair, where some of the municipalities are non-responsive. So they submitted expressions of interest to be on the program, but when we follow up, they are really non-responsive. So we have to find a way. In some instances where there was non-responsiveness, SALGA has helped us. The next slide, DDG. Now on Project 2 decision support tools, I've mentioned what they are. You can see them listed on that first paragraph. And more business management systems and business processes and different systems and tools that they require. So I'm not going to explain the activities, but CSIR is implementing this. They were to look at what the municipalities require and call for the technologies out in the private sector and also in the publicly funded institutions and bring them to the municipalities. The next slide. So they are supporting these 10 municipalities. It's a total of 18 projects. Again, you will see that Cape Town has got 6. And then you will also notice Nelson Mandela, there is 2. So it will be more than one decision support tool, but within the same municipality. So we've got Mhlatshuze, Thekwini again, Namakwa, Nelson Mandela, Rustenburg, et cetera. The next slide. Right, just on what they have done so far, it is more or less the same with Project 1, the ones that I've explained. They've engaged municipalities as well to understand what is required. And also some of the municipalities have requested MOUs with the DSI and the CSIR. So we have contracted and the contractor approved. CSIR is on the ground. They are engaging with these municipalities. So what is to happen when we come next time around here? Maybe we'll be able to now show you the type of technologies in each municipality and maybe explain that in further detail. And maybe where time could allow DDG, we could also bring the implementing entity themselves to report on each project to the portfolio committee. But a lot has been done. As I've mentioned earlier, it was not going to be about us finding silver bullets for these technologies, but to engage through a process by which municipalities themselves are able to select technologies for sustainability reasons into the future. Next slide, DDG. So on Project 3, it's innovation, capacity and innovation measurement, Chair. So like I said, we're measuring innovation behavior. We're measuring how municipalities are adopting innovation in the sense that where they've got budget for innovation, we are assessing that. And also in the sense where they have established innovation champions or maybe have designated even an official in their organogram, we are assessing that and to what extent the leadership and the strategies and the programs of a municipality is now speaking to innovation, because if the country is to move towards innovation, then it must be a whole of government approach and we require municipalities to become critical players. So we are measuring innovation. We will be capacitating municipalities through a training module with UKZN. And the other exciting one on this project is the smart cities assessment. So what we are trying to do, Chair, is to engage municipalities to identify projects that are smart cities projects or initiatives which are bankable and may be ready for investment. So what we want to do, we started doing this, is to engage private sector investors who may be interested in those projects. And not long ago, we engaged Standard Bank. They are interested in smart cities. They were asking us through this project, what are the bankable smart city initiatives in municipalities that are ready for investment. So we are trying to bring the private sector together with the municipalities by identifying the bankable smart city initiatives that are ready for investment. The next slide, DDG. So the project three is divided into those five areas. It's learning and training and curriculum. We will be training over 300 officials around innovation and how they can introduce innovation in municipalities. They are establishing a journal on innovation and sustainability as a university. And then the Municipal Innovation Maturity Index, we've released the first country report of how municipalities are adopting innovation, but we are incrementally refining this report, Chair. But we will be maybe in 2 years' time or every 2 years release another country report which can give a picture of how municipalities are embracing innovation to be able to have an oversight of what's happening there and what sorts of interventions are needed to further support. And then the smart cities I've explained. But the other one, now that we are assessing innovation in municipalities, the other work component, they will be assessing innovation in the public sector. Chair, what we have done on assessing innovation in the public sector was a study to look at policies in the public sector. To what extent are policies in education, are policies in human settlements, are policies in sanitation and these other sector departments speak to the language of innovation? What extent have those policies taken up STI? So on one hand, we are talking about STI as DSI, but on the other hand, we need to see if there is synchronization and the policies are now opening up to STI. There's a study. We'll be happy to release that study and share with the committee members what the findings were. And then the last one is on innovation champions. Next slide, Chair, TDG. Municipalities that are on Project 3, Emalahleni, Nama, Nyandeni, City of Tshwane. You may see a lot of our metros seem to be really coming in a number of these projects, but it's also an indication that they have really taken innovation to the next level. I think City of Tshwane are showing a high level of maturity around innovation because they've got processes, units, and systems, but you can see a whole lot of them keep coming back on this DDICP project. The next slide, DDG. I'm almost finished. Now, again, what has been done and what has been achieved was around governance, steering committees, workshop with municipalities, and identifying these municipalities that will participate in the assessments, the digital platform for assessing innovation, we call it the MIMI digital platform, has been established. And then literature and the database of smart city initiatives in municipalities and some theoretical literature work. And then on the right-hand side, you can see the work that they've got planned for the next coming period. Next slide. Project 4 has got two things, Chair, is to help municipalities to sustain these technologies. So you can see towards the end of that slide, two components. One is sustainability plans. So once we demonstrate these technologies, we have engaged CSIR to do Project 4, but Project 4 by CSIR will be done in a way where CSIR helps municipalities to sustain these initiatives, to sustain these technologies. And then also they are looking at policy environment, how to infuse and open up the policy a system of municipalities to be more pro innovation. The next slide, DDG. The next one. And the next one. Yes. Now on Project 5, Chair, we are trying something here where ICT tools, because most people have got access to ICT tools, to design a platform in which citizens can participate and through, you know, public participation in policies. We are learning and following and shadowing what has been done in other countries where this has been successfully done. So we are exploring here and testing with about 6 municipalities. We know it may not always work, especially in communities where you don't have connectivity, but we felt it's one area of technology we just need to explore. If you look at it from a lens of e-government, you know, how can we enable this? And there will be, I think, under the leadership of Paul Platinger, HSRC, who's leading this, is also engaging the portfolio, sorry, the parliament committee responsible for public participation in policy processes, or something along those lines. And at the next slide, PDG, we've got the following municipalities. Oh, sorry, I'm not on the municipalities. The initiative itself places in the policy space in the column highlighted at the center there. So how do you really bring about consultation around budgets, but using ICT tools, citizen initiatives, and coming up with a framework for that? And the key players are SALGA, Civic Tech Innovation, I think that's an NGO, and we are studying very much of how the other countries in the BRICS have done this. We have what we call Lighthouse Project we are following in Europe, but we're not going to copy-paste. We are just going to learn from them and find a way to support a few of our municipalities to move that direction. Next slide, DDG. So far, there has been some activities. We've got Emalahleni, Ethekwini, and initial meetings, and a very good interest expressed by these municipalities. I think they also have three of these municipalities. They also have the biggest public participation unit. So we are looking at replacing other non-responsive municipalities who have in the beginning expressed interest to participate. So like I said, we're studying this internationally. We've created a database of similar projects internationally, but we want to study it in the South African context and engage these other various players. There has been contracting. We will be supporting a cohort of researchers, PhD level in this area, but it's an area that is really important in how citizens can play a role to make input in modeling future policies. So if a particular policy is in place, but you then want to model a policy, how can we engage citizens around these policy processes? How can this become a practice? Maybe we don't know, but the idea is really to uncover if it can work in the municipal context. Next slide, DDG. Yeah, I thank you very much, Chair. I'm sorry I've taken a bit of time, but maybe I may mention that we are likely now in the next coming reporting to bring in each entity to show some of these examples. Maybe we can zoom into one project and give, once the technologies are selected, because they are in that process now, and give more substantive reporting in each individual project out of the 5 VVSDP projects that we have reported here. Thank you very much, TDG. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sepang, and thanks very chair, very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I think we also apologize. We had a very long presentation because I think since we did the previous presentation, there's been a lot that has gone on over the past couple of months. So we're just going to hand over to Chairperson and we'll get direction in terms of what the next steps are. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, colleagues. For that presentation, I think it's okay for DSI to sometimes have a bit of a more lengthy presentation and really an informative presentation. And we must take up that offer of maybe, you know, having certain entities come and present on their specific projects and initiatives. But of course, we are cognizant of the fact that time is not on our side, so we may have to sort of zoom into those entities that have some, you know, really key initiatives that speak directly to some of the stressing matters in that are facing our communities at the moment. So at this point, I'd like to open up to members who have any questions. Okay, I see Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Boshoff. Okay, Honorable Mananiso.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and good morning, colleagues. Let me start by welcoming all the presentations. And as you said, Chairperson, every time when you have DSI before us, it is a learning, you know, meeting where some of us are actually thought-provoked in terms of why not our municipalities and so on. But Chair, my question is with regards to what has been presented here. I've seen that in terms of their presentation on water and sanitation program, they have highlighted that they'll be working with Ekurhuleni. So I want to check if they have any plans to work with your Tshwane municipality, because we have noted that there's a crisis at Hammarskraal. So do they have any plans to actually assist government in ensuring that they save people of Hammarskraal? Because I think they are in a dire need of such interventions. And Chair, my other comment with regards to the presentation as well is that perhaps the department needs to look at not at they must try to strike the balance. I mean, you've got like, for example, KZN appearing in all these interventional programs. And I think that they will be leaving other provinces behind. So I just want to emphasize that they need to strike a balance and close the gap. And my question is on the issue of rural areas. I want to check if they've got a framework that is specifically designed for rural areas, or it's your spatial framework with regards to their plan of intervention on rural areas. And Chairperson, the other thing is with regards to the summary of the progress report process on their template, can they perhaps submit to us specifics on those 34 technologies? Like, they must give us details as well as those municipalities as they have highlighted on their presentation, because of, I believe that as a portfolio committee members, our interest as well is where we are coming from to check if our district are in line with the developments that are happening, more especially with regards to technology and innovation. And my last one, Chairperson, it's with regards to these municipalities that they have highlighted, that they have six municipalities that they are working with regards to e-participation. I think they need to stretch their work or plan to ensure that they include other municipalities. A capacity building program, it's the core of any service delivery and empowerment. So I want to emphasize to them that they must bring all these municipalities on board, more especially on capacity building program. I mean, we have seen that science, innovation and technology is there now. And if you are left behind, therefore, development, it is a dream for our people. That is what I want to say for today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mananiso. In fact, the matter on KZN is a reoccurring issue. I think we had raised that concern when we previously engaged on this, and Honorable Mananiso is identifying it again. So I guess the biggest concern is then just to be brought into confidence on how we are trying to equitably distribute these interventions across various provinces. And of course, it's ongoing work, but we need to start to see, you know, that particular move of spreading out these opportunities across the country. Honorable Boschel.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And first, I have to apologize. I think there's something like a Zoom spirit switching on one's camera and one's microphone. I don't know, without one's knowledge. But I sincerely apologize for that early on in the meeting. Now, I just want to make a statement and ask the department to respond to that, because I want to check whether I understand it correctly. And then I have a request. If I understand it correctly, as it was presented, the initiative lies with the municipality. The municipality needs to approach the department, because then there's the biggest chance of a successful project, because the municipality works through the request and they formulate it in such a way that it is clear that the municipality will have the political will and also the capacity to see it through. So it would not really be effective if the department reaches out to municipalities and say, okay, we see you have a need in this or that direction and we are willing to assist, because then it's the department's project and not the municipality's project. I want to confirm that is how I understood it. And it makes sense to me, but I just want to make sure if I'm correct. And then I want to ask, from the political side, as it was explained, it seems to me rather, let's say, official driven, meaning the officials of the municipality. They are actually the ones who should study whatever projects or assistance is available. And then they have to apply. But I think it may be really of value if our councillors are equipped with the knowledge and whatever to really approach the officials and say, but this and that is available, are we working on that, so that the political pressure is put on the officials. I'm especially thinking of my own constituency in the Northern Cape, where I think we have some municipalities with about as many inhabitants as one metropolitan ward, but then that ward might be the size of maybe the whole Gauteng sometimes, that municipality. So they have a problem. They get a smaller bit of money from the fiscus, because there are not so many people. And some of the worst performing municipalities are in our province, I believe, because of a lack of capacity. But that is where I see the Department of Science and Innovations projects coming in, because one can maybe gap this problem of having too few people scattered over too large an area to easily manage it. But this can be breached by these kind of innovative technological projects. So maybe these very weak performing municipalities could skip quite a number of places and start performing very well if they embrace these kind of technologies. And what I want to know about that is, can we engage some of the departmental officials to say, okay, we have a caucus meeting, a virtual caucus meeting of our councillors. Are you willing to address them, to explain to them what they as councillors can do to, you know, nudge the officials in the direction of adopting these technologies? And of course, I don't really ask it in an abstract way. I would like to make an appointment with one of the officials, if that can be done. Of course, it's not a kind of a political appropriation. It's just that we want to equip our councillors with the knowledge to do whatever they can to improve service delivery for the whole community which they serve. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Mananiso, followed by Litsie. Oh, sorry, Honorable Mananiso is already gone. Honorable Litsie.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to yourself, honorable members, the team from the department led by the DG. I see he's now in the meeting. And everybody else who may be on the platform. Chair, let's take this opportunity to appreciate the presentation from the department. And I think I want to echo the sentiments of Honorable Manami so that when the Department of DSI puts together a presentation for the Portfolio Committee, it is always an interesting a presentation that is focused generally, so they are not all over. They stick to the intention of the proposal, and I think we really appreciate that. It's a skill that probably many other departments can learn from, and yeah, so we appreciate that that I think it is interesting to note, Chair, that this DDM arrangement, the department has categorized it in as a three or four DDM processes, with each process clearly defining what they want to achieve at the end of that process, which is extremely commendable. The first one, the first process involved the selection of initiatives that are high impact and most responsive to the current district profiles or development challenges of these municipalities. And the second one is a process that seeks to support the DDM by establishing a bottom-up process for the viability and validation of innovations for service delivery program, or as they call it, the VVISDP. And the third one will be a process about positioning the DDM as a platform for inclusive innovation and for implementation of STI Decadal Plan Initiative, which I think, like I said, each process clearly knows what it wants to achieve with clear timelines and all of that. And I think we want to appreciate this high level thinking from the department. I think another comment, Chair, which will come as a question at the end, is that the department has compiled a list of implementation commitments in each of the DSI or four DDM impact areas, which is impact one, impact area one, they were talking about life-changing episodes, which would include skill development training and all of that. Impact two, which is the economic competitiveness and recovery, which amongst others speak about the support for new sources of growth in that area, the local systems of innovation and production. Impact area three, which was speaking about access to basic services and infrastructure, and impact four, societal problems, challenges and decision support, which speaks about youth and drugs and all of those things, including climate change. So the question on that, Chair, is that these commitments on impact areas, they were submitted to COGTA for inclusion in COGTA's plans. Is the department in a position to inform us how far is COGTA with including this impact areas on their plans? How far are they with that one? And I think maybe I think Honorable Mananiso touched on this a little bit, but when we spoke to, or when we interacted with the department on the 7th of September last year, we made a few observations. And this information of that, or these observations of that, how information about the support being provided by the department was being made known or available to the public. Because even today, we still have large sectors of our communities not realizing all this work that the department is doing. And we would have asked the department to try and popularize their information on the support of or support provided by them to other departments and other innovations. So have they have they considered doing that? If yes, how far are they with those plans? If not, why not? And then we said that, and this is what you also spoke about, Honorable Mananiso, that there's a concentration of DSI projects in one province called KwaZulu-Natal, and wanted to know how these interventions that the department are making in that space will be equitably distributed across other provinces. Maybe let them take us through how far are they with that. They can just, if they don't have information now, they can just respond in writing in a spreadsheet that these are a number of interventions or programs we're busy with, and per province, this is how much on this one. You know, just give us a clearer indication, because last year we had made an observation that many of these programs are in KwaZulu-Natal. So let them assist us with that. Sorry. We further made observation that the department must give us more detail on the collaborations and partnership created for these interventions that were identified, and how this will be resourced, and the impact and resources, and how the impact and resources will be monitored. And I think maybe let them give us a clear explanation on that, so that we're able to move forward. And then on that presentation last year on the 7th of September would have stated that there is still misalignment between national department DDM planning process and municipal one plan finalization processes. What information or progress can be reported in this regard? Do we still have those misalignments? How far are we trying to align them? What are the bottlenecks? What are the challenges? And what can be done to resolve this thing as soon as possible? And then how many of these municipal one plans have been finalized and are being implemented currently? And then there's one that I'm forgetting now. On this current presentation today, the department report progress in relation to its DDM process to the VVISDP. Can the department provide us with exact details around the amount of funding that has been secured from the EU? And what is the current funding shortfall on this? What additional sources of funding are being processed or considered? And what are the funding requirements for each project of this VVISDP? And then when do they envisage going into DDM process 3? Thank you very much, Chair. And indeed, we are always happy when the Department of DSI present to us most of the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Litsie. And DG, we do note the comments that you are sending forth, and we are aware that you are in transit, but are following the discussion on the virtual platform. We're on the virtual platform, but you're following the discussions. And we note the comments of the DG in the chat. Honorable Matlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself, to DG and the department, as well as colleagues and all present on the platform. Chair, I think colleagues have raised a number of issues that I wanted to speak to, but maybe one would just be two, three matters that the process of DDMs is primarily to forge partnerships and collaborations. I just want to find out from the department, in the process of implementing this particular plan, what are the major challenges that they are facing in as far as partnerships and collaborations? Because when you speak about municipalities, it's a different sphere of government. And currently, there are a number of challenges in relation to implementation of the DDM. One key issue, of course, colleagues have spoken to, is about resource mobilization. I just want to find out from the department, what are the current challenges in as far as resource mobilization is concerned, how they intend to deal with these issues, and whether, if there are challenges indeed, what impact will it have in terms of the implementation of the DDM and in making sure that these projects really see the light of day? When you currently, Chair, in number of municipalities, there is a challenge of who pays for what, and there is also a challenge of this six-step big brother approach when it comes to DDM, where municipalities are vehemently refusing to, you know, to put aside money for such projects because they are of a view that DDM is meant to bring collaboration, but the chunk of the budget must come from national departments, precisely because of the fiscal's arrangement that we have in municipalities, precisely because of the limited resources that municipalities have. Now, aligning my question with what Honorable Lee has said, as well as Honorable Mananiso, how do we intend to make sure that this particular project do really see the light of day with minimal resources that we have, and whether the expansion of resources, is it looking at private sector? How is the private sector coming on board in relation to this particular issue? My last question is about the municipal one plan vis-a-vis the DDM. I'm hoping that in most municipalities, the alignment is now done and we are all moving with one program, and there is a general consensus in terms of what needs to be achieved. But in as far as the one plan is concerned as alignment with the DDM, what is the involvement? And I would really wish to see details as Claudio, because I think in the presentation is quite high level. We're not getting proper details in terms of, you know, initiatives, program by program, how much money has been spent, who are the collaborators, how are they collaborating over and above issues of resources. I would really wish if we could, maybe like Honorable has indicated in the spreadsheet form, to say this is how much we're spending per project, what will be the intended outcome per project, and who are other partners, and which other partners do we envisage to bring on board so that we have a broadened program that will look on number of issues. Those will be my three questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlatsi, and to all members for your questions. I will then allow for the department to respond now. And if there are any other questions that we've left out, we'll come back for them. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Let me just check if you can hear me.
We can still hear you.
Okay, thanks very much. So I think the number of questions that have been raised are actually in some instances repeated through, so I will attempt to also address that, and in some instances some of them cannot be responded to at this point in time, mainly because they might need to go for us to go and get the specific details. The question about the distribution of these initiatives in provinces and in particular in different municipalities, the first point I want to highlight is that the presentation is really about the DDM project. So there are a number of other initiatives that the department is leading throughout the country, but for reasons that we have highlighted earlier on, they didn't quite qualify to be under the DDM. So if we really are reflecting on the actual initiative that the department has countrywide, the picture could be slightly different in terms of whether it is still KZN that it is or not. It might still be slightly the same, but maybe there's going to be more flesh in that instance. So it's basically what we have done is, although there are many initiatives, they were not plotted here because they didn't really qualify to fall under the DDM. And maybe with time, that process would actually improve. And the other point around that is, and I think Honorable Boshok did touch on it, is we have taken a conscious decision that we will not be catapulting any of these initiatives into municipalities. I think for reasons that some have actually highlighted, including Honorable Mahlatsi as well, is you don't want to go into municipalities with initiatives and there's no ownership. So that is why in the presentation, I think Tepang indicated that we make calls for and municipalities to respond to partner. And there are others that, for reasons that you have mentioned, when they have expressed the interest, when we follow up, they probably just all of a sudden they go quiet. And as a result of that, we therefore can't go to them and say, we are going to start something until such time that they say, okay, now we are ready, let's work together. Now, this aspect is quite important because it brings an element of ownership. Ownership in the sense that if they have themselves said, this is what we require. What we also do is to go and work with them to analyze the challenges. And that's really where the issue of the point that has been made around looking at a certain level of intelligence around what the issues are, what is required, and what are the gaps. And that's where other initiatives can start off being looking at building certain skill sets until such a point that the municipality may also be ready to absorb some of these initiatives. So it's really a myriad of various areas of metrics that we look at to say, is this particular municipality going to be ready for this or not? Otherwise, if we just really go in, then we realize that some of them may end up being white elephants. And I think that's the word that we use in the presentation to say we are avoiding to go and start things without buying in a partnership where they can end up being white elephants. So that's really why I think when we engaged with DCOG, I think it was a week or two ago, one of the issues that we talked about was how do we then, and it also answers some of the questions that was raised, how do we then move from having raised awareness of our offerings as a department to those municipalities that are already involved, from those to really others that at this point in time may not be aware. And this is really when I had the discussion with my counterpart at DCOG, we agreed that we're going to have another session where DCOG is going to help us by mobilizing a host of other districts that are currently not part of this, so that we can talk to them and try to sell this initiative to them. So we're hoping that that will also help in expanding this. But these initiatives in the end, they need to be co-owned. That's why there's also a slide where we indicate that we are looking beyond these being initiatives where when we move away, they die out. So we're looking at issues of sustainability. What role do the municipalities play in making sure that this actually continues to grow? So there are, and I think the one issue that Honorable Mananiso raised was the issue of how in the context perhaps of the differing levels of capacitation, how we bring on board rural municipalities. Underneath the whole DDM approach, there is a lot of work and initiatives that are being started that will then ultimately build into this area. The one thing that Sepang touched on, which one of the colleagues who is on board here is involved in WUSI, is we are starting now to engage at the pilot level some of the municipalities in establishing what we call the innovation champions. And we are doing this, we are also engaging in various municipalities, and I think it was last month or a month before where she was in the Northern Cape looking at just analyzing and understanding the profiling of a particular district. So what we are doing is that when we have done that, we then start to use these champions to help us identify some of the gaps that exist. And the champions that we identify will primarily be your unemployed graduates who would then be able to help us engage with various municipalities and so on and so forth and identify the potential solutions. So this is really happening at those rural municipalities where we are saying we want to try and see how perhaps one can bring them into a state of readiness when they could be able to absorb some of the innovation opportunities that we present. So I think I have in a way also addressed the question that and the comments that Honorable Boshoff highlighted on the approach of how these various districts get involved. And ultimately, as he has correctly said, we can't do anything without them agreeing to partner and availing themselves. The Honorable Chair raised a number of issues, and some of them are really just comments which we acknowledge. He also made a point around the issue of the concentration of the initiatives in the KZN, which I have attempted to address. And the issue of the monitoring of resources. So we have identified our, you know, if I can put it this way, seasoned implementing agencies to help us in the implementation of this initiative. So we've seen the CSIR, the Technology Innovation Agency, HSRC, and you know, in some instances, universities such as University of KwaZulu-Natal. So in terms of the allocation of budget and the monitoring, this is basically being done through them. So they would then be the ones who deploy the funds and monitor the utilization thereof, but also making sure that we build capacities within the municipalities, because the area of capacity is one of the big challenges that we're dealing with. Honorable Mahlatsi as well, in terms of what are the main challenges. When we were helping on the response to the flooding, for example, we had solutions that we were proposing we could offer to the municipalities, ranging from issues of just testing the water quality, you know, on-site quality water provision, and so on and so forth. And our sense was that while some of those were taken up, some couldn't because of the capacities within the municipality. So that's why it's important for us to also look at that, addressing that challenge, and it's a challenge that we can't address alone. Part of that challenge, of course, is how the municipalities themselves actually make sure that they, in their recruitment processes, they deal with issues of making sure that the people they recruit for various areas of work are actually qualified for that. So that's one of the challenges. And the other, of course, being the general resourcing issues. And you know, I think in two or three slides, we have highlighted that in some instances, the municipalities will say, we want to be part, but when we follow up, then they don't come back to us. So those are some of the challenges. We are obviously quite aware that, especially in rural municipalities, funding is quite an issue. So that's why we have indicated that to get this thing going, while we have the buy-in from these municipalities, we already have an allocation of about 100 million to deal with it. So that will hopefully just start to get these things going. Working with other government departments, and I think I need to really highlight this because it also deals with what we're going to call, what we have called process three, is that there is an aspect of the implementation of the decadal plans, which are not DSI plans. These are national plans where we say when we implement the decadal plan, what is going to be the role of other sister departments who are line departments relating to a specific area of work. And this is really where I'm also pleased that we have made some significant strides around the issue of budget coordination. And we hope that this will also then help ease the implementation of the district development model insofar as the innovation initiatives are concerned. So we can, I think, the bank will probably be able to give us some input, insight as to what exactly is the amount of funding from the EU, what the other funding are, and as we probably have indicated, some of it is coming from the department directly, but we are hoping that we'll be able to secure others. And he has already highlighted that we started to have some engagement, especially in areas such as the Smart City initiatives, where engagements with other private sectors such as the bank, the banks have actually started. And we're hoping that obviously those will come in if the initiatives are bankable, So we're hoping that that will also help in terms of just making sure that it also brings the sustainability aspect into the whole discussion. The other thing I think that is important to highlight is that our plan is for this to not only be about the capacity development and skills development, but that it also in its own way will begin to create real investable economic opportunities. So when we talk about issues of entrepreneurship development, here we're talking about empowering young people, women, to have businesses that would actually be making an income on the basis of the offerings that they would be selling. And we have started, we've got initiatives that at this point, even though perhaps not already elevated into the DDM, initiatives such as the Enviropreneurs programs, where young people and rural people are now beginning to look at opportunities of income generation through the issue of cleaning of environment and so on and so forth. So it is about also bringing that element of initiative that will be able to create proper economic activities that will not necessarily be relying on grants going forward. So that I think is important to highlight. Can I perhaps, Tepang, just a few questions that you picked up, especially on the issues of the details. And of course, the details as requested per project, you probably might have seen on one of the slides how many projects they are. So if we are ready to go into the details of per project, we will be guided by yourselves. So we'll be happy to do that, as long as we know that it really is going to take a lot of time to go on to the details of the project. What you have seen on one of the slides, which has got a map, is really the listing of the projects. And as I said, I will really leave it up to the honorable members to decide how you want us to really address detailing that in terms of how much money, how many people, whatever and whatever. But, you know, we will always be available to yourselves to provide that detail to the level in which you require. Tepang, any of the things that I've left out, if you can really deal with that, and then I can come back if I pick up something that I might have forgotten.
No, thank you very much, TDG. I think there is about maybe three items or issues I can just quickly comment on. I think the question about COCTA and inclusion of projects on the COCTA 1 plans. And another question was on long-term investment, which I think goes together perhaps with the EU funding, you know, how much the funding and the budget breakdown. There's something also which was mentioned, whether the municipalities could approach the department. I think on those three DDG. So on the COCTA one, whether the DSI projects here are included on the one plans, we have been engaging, Chair, with the DDM meetings in municipalities where we can. And then we then wrote official letters, which were signed by the DG to the municipal managers and also to the DDM coordinators in these respective municipalities, giving them projects and confirming these are our commitments. We wrote similar letters to COCTA, submitting a database of projects for mainly for process one and also for process two, mentioning that these are the projects from the DSI for inclusion in the one plans. They have been included in some of the municipalities, but we've got a feeling in some of the municipalities, the process of inclusion is more controlled by them. So we are assessing, we've got another activity we are doing just to study these one plans to see how much in the one plans technology innovation projects have been included. But officially, we've handed them over. We are also engaged in bilateral meetings as DSI. We've been requested by individual municipalities to have one-on-one with the DSI. So we are preparing for those, and we'll be asking our TDG here to support us in those one-on-one engagements. I think it's going to be around the same issue of inclusion of one plans, but also of strengthening bilaterals between DSI and municipalities. What is also coming out on the VVISDP, some of the municipalities are requesting MOUs with DSI. So we are taking that back to our EXCO for decision on how this could be managed. And then on the long-term investments, the VVISDP process too is mainly funded by the EU through an instrument, they call it the sector budget support. That instrument allows DSI to co-invest on the policy initiatives they see necessary. So DSI has also has got co-investment on the VVISDP. But what we have learned also is that I think if you recall on the presentation by the DDG on the background, the principle of DSI's approach to DDM is around securing international donor funding to support municipalities with innovation. So VVISDP is a demonstration of that. But into the future, how we can continue looking at our international donor funders and partners to bring additional investments, I think maybe it's something we are looking at. But indeed, there is a decision to say, how can we fund this long term beyond the 3 years? It is funded for 3 years, but how can we are looking at it, and we are engaging EXCO to look at this intervention as a long-term intervention, but partnerships for funding become critical. But DSI alone cannot fund innovation in municipalities. So I think we are learning that quite quickly. So in terms of the DG advice and also the decadal plan processes, there is this issue of budget coordination. How can we engage provincial treasurers to ensure there is budget coordination to support innovation in municipalities? So that's another discussion also at EXCO. Now, on detailed reporting, I agree with the DDG. There is so much, but I think we are learning maybe that the PowerPoint presentation may not be enough. We may look at how we standardize the reporting in a way that brings a level of narrative and detail enough to bring a budget and to, you know, impact and other things. But at the same time, the impact, reporting on impact, we started with VVISDP just about a year ago when we initiated it. We contracted just early this year. So the impact will come with the project, but we will always take that into account when we package for reporting to the portfolio committee. But it may just not be enough perhaps to just bring the slides. We can bring in the narratives, but the DDG is making a point. We've got over 42 projects just on project one and project two. How do we then bring a narrative enough? It can be a document close to 100 pages, but we'll be guided. And the other one was what I mentioned earlier, to say we may want to zoom into each project rather than all projects, and bring in implementing entities who are implementing, who can then be able to bring into the discussion the level of detail. We're also willing to bring the budget report in the next engagement of the EU funding for the SPS and what is the co-investment by TSI and how is the allocation by project. Then on the question around municipalities approaching the department, indeed, Chair, there are municipalities who are approaching the department. VVISDP has been a bottom-up approach in the sense that there will be a call for expression of interest, and then the municipalities will express interest. When they write to us to express interest, we will ask them to explain what is the challenge, what is the service delivery challenge do they have, what is the innovation they are looking at, how will the innovation help the municipality deliver services, and how does this fit into the municipal product strategies like IDPs, etc. And if the motivation aligns with the program objectives, then we have brought those municipalities on board. But we've got other DSI instruments like the Technology Acquisition and Deployment Fund, which is designed around municipalities who can approach the department and say, we are applying to the Technology Acquisition Deployment Fund. we need support with this particular technology, etc. So VVISDP, bottom up, call for expression of interest. CATF is more around where municipalities could apply to TIA. The instrument CATF is managed at TIA. They can apply. I think there's more to three there, where they then say, we've got this technology, you know, we need support with acquisition and deployment of that particular technology. But what this means is that we have a module, training module with UKZN to train municipal officials on innovation. But I think the module as it's being developed will have to cover educating officials in municipalities about what the NSI is, what are the components of the NSI, what are the programs of the NSI in different entities, and what sort of instruments by the DSI exist, how to apply. But the university as an academic institution, they are engaging and looking at how to accredit that module. They are building it up. In fact, it's not yet available, but it also aligns with what the decadal plan seeks to achieve around skills and around training. Thank you very much, TDG.
Thanks, Tepang. Are you able to speak to the question of the issues raised last year on the misalignment within the EDM? I think Honorable Liki asked about that. But while maybe you're getting your thoughts together, Honorable Liki also asked a question about the issue of when process three, which involves the decadal plan, will happen. So we have now just started, I think, the implementation of the decadal plans, even though I think the bulk of the actual implementation will be happening in 23-24, but I think we have, in anticipation of what it was going to look like, some of our 2022 initiatives are already looking into that. So I think somewhere between the middle of next year, we'll be able to say this is what we are already doing, which is aligned to the decadal plan as part of the DDM. So I think that will probably be one of the feedback that we'll provide when we do maybe not the next update, but probably the update that comes after the next one. So I think we'll be ready to indicate that. So on the issue of misalignment, Sepang, have you got a response for that?
I'm not sure if I got it right, TDG, but was this the partnership one? Partnership question?
Do we perhaps want to allow Honorable Lipia to come forth with the question again? Did you capture it well, Dr. Moss?
I think I probably, I just said misalignment issue, and maybe Honorable Lipia can just refresh our minds on that again.
Honorable Lipia?
Yeah, can I question you for you? I had 2 pages.
I'm also not sure, but
I was asking on the municipal one plan,
yeah,
that last year in your presentation, you said there was still misalignment between national departments, DDM planning process, and municipal one plan finalization process. And then I was asking what progress can be reported in this regard, and how many municipal one plans have been finalized and are being implemented.
Yes.
Is that helpful?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Thank you very much. I think what we know is that the first generation of municipal one plans have been concluded. But I know also there's a process, I think it's by DPME, that is coming, where provincial departments and national departments will be discussing the one plans and the mechanisms to strengthen the participation of national departments provincial departments in the one plans and in the DGM processes. So I know COGTA is driving that. I think we have seen an invitation recently from the DG's office around that effect. But the point we made last time was exactly that the misalignment will be where some of the municipalities will be behind in terms of their one plans, not even have established the hubs, the technical hubs. It was just an observation we had as DSI. But in the recent reporting, I think most of the municipalities have got their first generation one plans, which could then be evolved from there. But our observation, Chair, is that the partnership modalities in DDM has to mature. This is just my own observation because I participate in this platform sometimes. So it is one thing to list a project and say DSI, COGTA are partners, but a partnership goes beyond that because it's when the resources are aligned now, you know. So I think the issue of partnership modalities, the issue of implementation arrangements, it is fine to see a one plan as a table which lists a number of initiatives by various departments, but there are implementation mechanisms to make sure that the projects are implemented in a partnership way and that the implementation is optimal. So it's just my own observation that there are these things that will slowly maybe mature as the DDM platform evolves, but there are these other small arrangements that has to mature with that. It's the same thing with the empowerment of officials who are acting in the DDM project themselves. So you've got the political hub, you've got the technical hub, then you've got the project managers who are within this project. You know, how could they then work together and be empowered around project decisions? But I feel maybe as the TDM platform matures, these things will really fall into their rightful spaces. And the other one, Chair, is that we are also engaging COGTA to say we have to look at the TDM as a platform for innovation. So you've got the six pillars in the TDM, but how in the future iterations of the DDM, there's a focus on innovation. So we're doing this. We've got a survey we've done with DDM stakeholders, and we're submitting the survey to COGTA. But we are slowly trying to say, indeed, the DDM platform could evolve and become a full-fledged platform for innovation in the future. Thank you, Chair. I hope I have answered in a way difficult question there.
Thanks. And just a very brief one in terms of the review and updating of the DDM one plans. This meeting is happening this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Of course, being coordinated by the Presidency, DPSA, and DCOG. So that issue, I think slowly we're coming closer to each other, and that alignment will in due time actually be fully in place.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mwase. I think coming out of the conversations that we are having this morning, colleagues, is that maybe on our side as a portfolio committee, we may have to look into a joint committee meeting with maybe COGTA, the department responsible for digital technologies and communication, maybe some CETAs that are relevant to the skills provision that has been identified in the conversations that we've been having and in the work that the department has been doing around bringing to life the district development model. And still on that matter, I think another conversation that we need to have. So next week, colleagues, you would know that we've had to reshuffle the program in order to make way for the NASFAS working session that we need to have, that we're supposed to have today. So colleagues will see, members will see that the committee program has changed just a little bit. And coming out of our engagements during the midterm review, where, you know, there was an agreement and we resolved that we need to look into the skills master plan. Coming out of this conversation is the fact that we perhaps must continue a conversation around whether or not the skills master plan that's being put together by DHET incorporates some of the skills identified by colleagues that need to strengthen economic growth in the support of the district development model, or bringing to life the district development model, right? So, and I mean, also key to that is, and Mr. Morse, I don't know if you know, if you have any information in relation to this, so whether or not, for example, in DHET putting together of the skills master plan, they have reached out to yourselves as DSI, and colleagues have collaboratively put their minds together on how, on the skills needed to bring the DDM to life, right? And whether or not there are conversations being had by between provinces and municipalities on how to bring in TVET colleges, CET colleges, and even universities in supporting the DDM through the production of, you know, graduates qualified in the in the skills that have been identified to be crucial in bringing to life the DDM. And so, yeah, so those are some of the questions that I mean, Mr. Moss, if you can answer some of them now, it's great. But I think it's an ongoing conversation that we need to have with DHET. And it's moments like these where you see the synergies between the work that DHET does and the work that that the DSI does. So I don't know, Mr. Moss, if you'd like to respond to, you know, that the issues around the skills. If not, though, we will follow up that conversation with DHET next week.
Yeah. So thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think on the issue of the development of the skills plan, we are working very closely with DHET, fortunately, and we have also looked at a whole range of areas that will enable the implementation of the DKDAC plan, and say, you know, what sort of skill set. So some of them really focusing on what we can do with, for example, the TVET colleges. We have, you know, programs that we already identified the skills required, for example, in the just transition, uptake of the fuel cells and so on and so forth. So that work is being done. We have participated very well in that process. So our view is that it will really, when the plan is finally released, it would have covered the gaps that we have identified.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Mwafe. Thank you so much, Sapang. Sapang, can I get your surname, please?
I don't know if he's still there.
Musia. Musia.
Musia, okay. Yes. Thank you so much, Mr. Musia, for your contributions to the discussion that we've had this morning. I think it has been very fruitful. And I think also, colleagues, we must also acknowledge the fact that there is an attempt to try and strengthen, you know, economic growth and employment opportunities within districts in order to ensure that, you know, we don't have this concentration, over-concentration of citizens in what you would call economic hubs, but we decentralize economic opportunities, we decentralize economic activity. And I think that's really key, you know, of what is coming out of the work that is being done by the department in strengthening or bringing to life the district development model. So thank you so much, colleagues. There are a number of recommendations that have been noted of you know, follow-up conversations that need to be had, work that the department needs to be doing. And I think, Sabang, you really captured, Mr. Busia, you really captured a lot of that in your response. And for me, that makes up a great sense of what then becomes our way forward as a department, but as well as a portfolio committee in strengthening that the work that the department is doing in the implementation of a district development model. So we want to really thank you, colleagues, for the time that you've given us this morning. I think our session with you has come to an end. We are about to adopt minutes. I don't think you would want to stay for that, so you can leave. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and all honourable members. We appreciate being given the opportunity.
Okay, honourable members, we have two sets of minutes to adopt this morning. I just want to open them on my side. Okay, there are minutes from the 15th of June and the 31st of August. 15th of June, we had a very short meeting. It was solely to adopt some reports and some minutes, which we did. So at the top of those minutes, it would indicate who was in the meeting. And then they would end with the 2.2.3, a draft report on the consideration of the Department of Higher Education and Training's 2021 second and third quarter performance reports. And then the last page would give us our discussions, or the second last page would give us our discussions, our resolutions. And then the last page would have my signature. So those are the minutes on the 15th. The minutes on the 6th, on the 31st, sorry, of August, which was this Wednesday, where we interacted with the Department of Higher Education and Training on the evaluation of university mergers. Really an interesting conversation there, which we all agreed we wish we could have had at an earlier stage of the work that we have been doing. Colleagues would see the minutes on that first page. They continue to page 2, which ends with a summary of the presentation by Ms. Dambalo. And the third page then speaks to the promotion of equity of access and redress past inequalities by ensuring that staff and student profile in higher education progressively reflects the demographic realities of South African society. And the minutes ends on page 5 with the consideration of minutes, which is point number 5 of this particular document. I think on my side, colleagues, the only thing I would like to add to these minutes is perhaps a clear, it should come out that very clearly, I mean, I think bullet point number 1, you can say it sort of says that, but I think it must come out more clearly that in terms of merged institutions, there were a number of requests from members for them to look into various segments of analyses, pattern observation. So Honorable Mananiso spoke to institutional culture. Have we observed institutional culture in the different institutions post the mergers? Honorable Mahlatsi spoke to an analysis of the labor relations and just generally, you know, how labor related matters have unfolded in different institutions that have been merged. So I think bullet point number 1 makes it look like we're trying to compare non-merged and merged, but I think we want to try and make a comparison of merged as well as a separate matter to understand how the different institutions that were merged did overcome certain things. So I think that needs to come out a bit stronger. And that's the input from my side. I'd like to, at this point, check if there are members who would also like to make amendments to the minutes and then call for members to adopt and second the minutes. I didn't even check if we meet quorum. Janelle, do we meet quorum?
Yes, Chair, we do.
Okay. All right, thank you so much. Can I check if there are members who'd like to make amendments? Okay, I don't see any hands. Can I note members who'd like to adopt the minutes? Okay, I see Honorable Itie, Honorable Itie, and then Honorable Mashat. Honorable Itie.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. The name has not changed. Still, Walter Tebogo Itie. I move for the adoption of both sets of minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Itie. Honorable Mashati.
Thank you very much, Chair. I second the adoption of both sets of minutes.
Thank you. So, Honorable members, these minutes of the 15th of June and the 31st of August 2022 have been adopted by Honorable Itie, and the adoption of the minutes has been seconded by Honorable Mashati. Thank you so much. Colleagues, there have been some changes made to the committee program, as mentioned earlier on, to accommodate the fact that members were not available. There will be a newly proposed program, and I'd like to stress that latest. Anello, when are we supposed to? Okay, yeah, sorry. I think I found it. On the 14th of September, we are meant to meet with the University of Pretoria to receive an update on their transformation journey. Colleagues would remember that at some point we had wanted to have a joint meeting with the University of Pretoria and Stellenbosch, but due to logistics and so forth, we took Stellenbosch earlier on in the year and we went there physically. We would have also loved to go to UP, but there are remits of which we work within that are instructed to us. And so we are calling UP to us. And the meeting will take place in Mark's building, and really all members will be expected to be physically present in that meeting. The university and its management, its student representatives, its workers will be present in that meeting. And part of what we will seek to understand in that meeting is a follow-up on, so colleagues would have noted that we've had conversation in writing around the recent student protests at the institution, and there was a response that came back to us. And part of what this meeting will also look into are some of the concerns that may have come out of the recent student protests. So please, members, you are expected to be at that meeting physically, as well as the on-site briefing on Friday the 16th. Yeah, I think those are the physical meetings. I hope I'm not leaving anything out. Okay, there'll also then be the NASFAS briefing that has been moved to Friday the 23rd, where you'll also be expected to be there physically. Please diarize these dates. I don't want to say apologies will not be accepted, but that's what I'm tempted to say, where you will be expected to attend these engagements physically in Cape Town. I think with that being said, honorable members, thank you so much for your time. Honorable Itie, I see your hand is up, but I'm not sure if that's a legacy hand or an old hand. Oh, sorry, a new hand.
It was legacy, but please repeat the date of the UP visit so that we diarize correctly. Thanks.
Okay, we will also send the updated program, but for now, the UP, the University of Pretoria, is coming to Parliament on the 14th of September, which is a Wednesday. We will meet in Mark's building. On the Friday, we will go to the Center for High Performance Computing in Cape Town. That's part of our science and innovation work. As agreed, we said we would try our best, particularly in Cape Town, to have as many on-site meetings as possible, because we are here, we're in Cape Town. And so it should be easier to do so. It doesn't need too much logistical planning. So that's the on-site briefing for the Center for High Performance Computing, which is on Friday the 16th. And then on Friday the 23rd, we are going to NASPAS for a working session. Remember, colleagues, they would have asked us to, they would have, from coming out of the many questions that we ask, the CEO would have requested that, can you please come so that we can take you through some of the issues that you are concerned about. So, but then of course, an updated program will be sent to all members. Okay, thank you so much, honorable members. Have a lovely Friday and keep safe. We'll see each other next week.
Thank you, Chair. Have a wonderful afternoon yourself. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Recording stopped.